If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
This is a business about taking care of people. It's about hospitality. It's about genuinely caring about them. And because of that, as you get bigger, you become more institutional and you forget that.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Doug Fullaway is the president of 14 Plus LLC, a firm that specializes in investing in the growing senior living market. This market is growing faster than any other demographic and has produced returns superior to returns over other types of real estate because the need for services for seniors does not decline when the economy slows. Mr. Fullaway brings a unique set of experiences as he was previously the CEO of Vigilan, one of the largest suppliers of software selling to thousands of senior living communities. He knows the leaders in the industry and the superior regional operators, which allows him to provide superior deal flow and reduce investor risk. He holds a BS in industrial engineering from Oregon State University and an MBA from the Harvard Business School. He serves as an infantry officer in the U.S. Marine Corps, and he loves fly fishing, skiing, and flying. Doug, welcome to the show.
Very nice to be here. Thank you.
Oh, the pleasure is mine. I guess the first question out of the gate is, what do you fly?
Whatever they have that I could rent, usually a Cessna 172.
Okay. Good for you. That's tons of fun. There's so many. Do you do any backcountry flying up there in Oregon?
A little bit, but not a lot.
Yeah, that's a skill set that takes a lot of practice with some really experienced pilots to refine. Hey, the same questions I ask everybody who comes on this show is, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
So I started out here in Oregon. I was born in a small town. My dad worked in the lumber industry. Eventually went to Oregon State, got my degree, and went and served in the Marine Corps, and then went back to business school. And I came back here to Oregon to work in a high-tech business, in a test and measurement business. I worked for a big billion-dollar company, and then I joined a startup when they had 10 people. And I stayed with that company for 10 years, spending 2 years in Europe as the operations manager, and then several years in Singapore as the head of the business in the Pacific Rim. I came back here to Portland. I helped turn around some companies. And it was in the business of fixing a small turnaround company, and 9/11 hit. And the board didn't like my idea, which was to let everybody go, including myself, because we were out of money. Nobody was buying, even though we had the product finished. And so they fired me. Well, that didn't turn out well for them. It didn't turn out well for me, except a really great thing happened. Somebody called me and said, would you help me fix this software company? And I said, well, sure. What do they do? And he said, oh, they do software for assisted living. And it was 2002. And I said, what's that? I had no idea. I eventually became the CEO of that company. And we had literally thousands of customers. We were the biggest supplier of software for assisted living. So from 2002 to 2016, I was involved in selling software to assisted living communities all over the country. And that's how I learned the business. And a large company bought our company. And I thought I'd stay for a year. I stayed for four. But I realized I was making better money investing and helping other people invest. And so I quit that job. And for the last 5 years, I have been strictly investing or helping other people raise the money so they can grow their senior housing business. So that's how I got here. It wasn't by design.
Right. Yeah. So it's only been in the last 5 years or so that you have really invested in or begun investing in senior living on your own.
Yeah, actually, I made my first investment well over 10 years ago because I was calling on a customer in a small town in Eastern Oregon called Madras. It has a population of about 15,000 people. And there was a lady who had a beautiful assisted living community. And her problem was she wasn't making any money. She was losing $700,000 a year.
Oh.
And I was trying to sell her software. And I asked her, well, what do you want to do? And she said, well, I actually want to sell it. And I looked at it and I thought, wow, maybe I should step out and actually help buy this. So I rounded up four other people. We rounded up a small group of our friends and raised $1 million and borrowed the rest so we could make a $5 million purchase. And for me, I didn't know what I was doing. Now, it's turned out to be really a good investment in that we've paid an 8% dividend to our investors for years and years and years. And we're taking care of a population which largely doesn't have any money. 80% of our residents are paid for by Medicaid in the state of Oregon. So I feel really good about this because it does good thing for a lot of people. It's been great financial performer. You know, it was really fun to open my $40,000 check that came last week for last year's business there. And when I go visit, you know, I see good things. So I stumbled into it. And to make no mistake, I made mistakes there. I certainly knew what had to happen to fix it because I'd learned from all my other customers. But I made a really bad mistake in that I really didn't talk to all my investors up front to see what their objectives were. You know, gee, they want to invest, they want to make some money, it'll be a great thing. But, you know, I forgot that some of them, when somebody came along and said, I'll buy this property from you for $11 million, and we'd paid five, like, well, we should take this deal. We had two investors that had no interest whatsoever. So we didn't have enough votes, we couldn't do it. We all had to stick with it, even though we'd been in it for 7 years at that point. So lesson one, I made a mistake. Talk to all your investors and figure out what they want. If they have very different needs, you probably ought to put them in different investments or maybe not invest with them. So,
yeah. You structure your deals. I mean, a lot of the deals we're seeing today, I mean, the general partner has the buy-sell authority.
Yeah, that's why I made a mistake. I didn't have the buy-sell. We didn't have a general partner. It was member managed based on the advice of the lawyer. That was bad advice.
Yeah.
It was not a good decision at all.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you want to have that. Not that you're trying to be authoritarian over your investors, but if you're the one controlling the investment, if you're the one making the business decisions, then yeah, you want that authority to say, hey guys, we're selling.
Yeah.
I mean, you listen to your investors, of course, you know, but if it's a home run like that, you're collecting $6 million plus all your cash flow. So you've doubled your money plus your cash flow for 7 years. Okay.
Yeah. Look, it's turned out to be okay, but nevertheless, but that was a lesson I learned that I made a bad mistake about.
Yeah. Now that I think it really is cool that you got to have, or you were able to experience so many years of selling software to this industry. So you got to see the back end of it.
Yeah. I had to learn every problem that everybody has in the business. I mean, there's just no doubt I had to do that. Well, I was saying that, you know, this investment's turned out to be a good one and I've learned great things about it in terms of how to do this for other people, because what I found is they're really great operators in the senior housing space. But that doesn't mean they've ever raised money, or maybe they raised money from their friends and family and now they're ready to grow and they don't know how to do it.
Mm.
So I found a niche where I fit. That is, I can really understand whether I have an operator who knows what they're doing and has a team that's going to be safe for the investor, because those companies, the operators, are critical, more critical than in other real estate investment. Because if you have a multifamily building with 100 residents, you maybe have 3 or 4 employees.
Right.
If you have an assisted living community, you have 55 to 60 employees, and you have got to understand how to manage that. And it's a non-trivial problem. So, you know, you can have somebody who looks good on paper, but they really don't know what they're doing. And because of it, the investors I take this to know that I have vetted the operator. So I add value for the investor. And for the operator, I add value in that some of them don't know what the term waterfall means or what the pref should be, or they don't know those things. So I can prepare a set of financials that make sense to the investor, and I can explain it and walk through with the operator to make sure they're actually going to be able to deliver against those. So I found a space where I fit very nicely in the middle, and I can add value to both sides. And because of it, I see $1 billion of deals a year, and I don't hardly leave my desk. They started off, and I find I can do small value add, meaning somebody acquires something for $12 million or less, meaning they need $3 or $4 million of equity. I can raise that money like clockwork. Now, what it's done though is, because I've been able to do this, for example, right now I'm working on a deal where there's an acquisition of 14 assisted living communities, and the transaction is going to be someplace between 120 and 140 million in size. You know, and I'm the guy who's facilitating that. So I found my way into that because I can kind of talk to both sides. I can talk to the institutional investor in this case, who may not understand senior living. And I can talk to the operator, who, by the way, was a customer of mine for many, many years. So, you know, it's sort of a natural place for me to fit. And, you know, my advice to somebody is, you probably know things, or you can learn things about a special thing, get really good at it, and eventually it will give you a differential advantage.
Yeah, I would say absolutely. That's that, and you found that. What, when you mentioned the term value add, what is value add in the senior living?
So in value add case, you've got a building that's running and it perhaps isn't running well. And unlike other quote real estate investments, you can come along and acquire a property, a community, to use the proper term in the assisted living world, a community that is perhaps producing only a 18% net operating income when the industry is really expecting and is delivering a 28%. Well, if you buy it at that value, you can then fix it by having the right operator who knows how to control the costs and hire the right people and do the right marketing and drive that net operating income up 5 or 10 points. And you've added value. And if you do that over and over again, you will easily produce a close to a 10% cash on cash return and certainly a high teens IRR. I have one gentleman I started with 9 years ago who had no senior housing. Today he has 24 of them. He's producing a cash on cash return that is almost exactly 10%. And the IRR on each deal is always over 17%. So value add is a really great place to go because there are so many sort of mom and pop senior housing communities that you can go find them and do well with them.
Yeah. What are some of the things that constitute value add? Like what are some poorly run, you know, things that you guys can go in and fix?
So the first thing and the most common thing is the costs are out of control. You know, how do you know how much staff you actually need? Because you could have one group of 20 people who are not having a lot of need and another group who have a very high level of need. So saying I need 3 people for 20 to serve them may be a really bad answer. It might be you actually need 2, or it might be that you need 7. So that's the first thing, is controlling the labor costs and understanding how to do that by getting it right. And that takes experience and it takes the right, quite frankly, tools to do the job. So that's one. So it's really a labor cost management issue. The second one is very much an issue of marketing. Well, often there's a building which maybe the outside doesn't look too good. It needs a little, you know, cleaning up and straightening up. And it needs a serious presence on the web. And it needs somebody who is making a continuous set of calls on referral sources like doctors, outplacement counselors at the hospitals, you know, ministers, to get the word out that it exists. So that's the second thing, is marketing is another one. And there are other approaches too. Sometimes you need to change the product. That is, it's in there as an independent living. Think of it as an apartment building that happens to have a kitchen and dining area in it. But it's not doing that well, and the demographic is older and actually needs a higher level of care. So changing that from independent living to assisted living, or changing some of the rooms to provide memory care. So, and understanding what the local market is around you and what the competition's like. So sometimes changing the product is necessary. And sometimes it's a combination of these 3 things that I've talked about. So it gets a little complicated sometimes. There are also creative things. Right now, I'm working with somebody who's buying what was a hospital built in the 1930s. They're buying it for $2 million for 50 rooms. And they're going to spend about $4 million making it modern. You know, they're going to tear it back to the walls and make it absolutely modern on the inside. The outside of the building is beautiful. It's in a great location. So that's taking something and turning it into a senior housing community.
That's really interesting. And I guess how does someone underwrite a deal like that where they say, hey, I see a potential acquisition, but how do you go in? And I mean, because a lot of these are really just business plan implementation. It's not, hey, you know, we can put in paint and carpet and get another $50 a unit.
Yeah, this is way more complicated than that. So this is not for the amateur. The first thing I'd say is, there's got to be an operator who's already operating more than 5 properties involved, because if not, you're going to get bad advice from architects about how to design it and build it. They'll think they know, but they don't really know. And yes, there are some firms. I happen to live in Portland, Oregon, and there's one, Anchor Moisen, another one, LRS Architects, who've done literally hundreds of senior housing properties. There's a gentleman in Houston, Texas, Reason Associates, who's done literally hundreds. So you can go find one of those. But even then, the first thing I'm going to say is, who's your operator? So, you know, rule number one is go find a good operator and make friends. Rule number two is, if you're doing something that's as substantial as I'm talking about, don't think you're going to do this as your first project for development, because no lender is going to step up and lend you the money. You've got to know what you're doing about development. So maybe you don't know, but you have the vision, then find the developer. So assemble the team and really you got to have the money, the pursuit costs to, you know, do the market study. You got to know if there's enough demand and not enough, the competition will allow you to get in there. You need to know what the licensing regulations are. You need to know, get the zoning taken care of to make sure it's okay. I mean, in many ways more complicated than a brand new construction project.
Oh yeah. Oh my goodness. You're making my head spin.
But if you're, you know, if you're in some locations where there's just no land to buy, if you can get that in there, likely to be a great place to put your money, because you know it's going to be very hard for the competition to come in. And once you're in a well-established neighborhood that maybe has coffee shop, restaurants, walking distance, you're going to be golden for a long, long time.
That's really, really interesting. So your position, though, in the business now is really just coming alongside as a capital partner, or do you also advise on all these things we just talked about?
So I help people with all these things. And, you know, I set my fee structure so it works for the project. Sometimes that means I don't make anything until, you know, there's closing. Sometimes it means I don't even make much then, because what I'll do is they'll agree to give me 1 or 2% of the general partner position, so I make income in the future. I try and structure things to fit the specific situation.
Gotcha. What are some of the things, you know, that people are doing wrong that are causing them to then want to sell and really just not hitting the returns they should be hitting?
So first of all, there's something they're doing which isn't quote wrong, but they just get old. I mean, I'm working right now with somebody who's 86 years old, whose kids don't want to be in the business. And he really wasn't very anxious to take it out because he wanted to control. He just wants to sell it to anybody. He wants to sell it to somebody who's going to carry on his legacy. So those exist. And so there's one, there's two properties in Florida that are going to be sold to another operator. And, you know, I'm the middleman, if you will, in introducing them and getting the numbers put together, because the seller doesn't really know what it's worth. The buyer absolutely knows, but he doesn't want to pay too much. So I fit in the middle. Now, there are places where people, quote, make mistakes. The first one they make is, and the most common one is, they actually don't understand the market when they're going in. And it's really easy to put up another building and they say, oh, we got lots of demand. But they forget about the fact that somebody else can show up. So Houston, Texas was this way, and it still is a bit this way, where, you know, a huge population, you can show market size, you show lots of demand, but wait a minute, average occupancy was 70% in assisted living. And that was before COVID hit. So that's a mistake that's actually quite common, is people build someplace because it's easy and they have a vision. And maybe they've been a home builder who decides to do it, or they're in a completely different business and they had troubles finding a place for their mom. So they get the passion to go build one. And they don't understand the market. You know, these are local markets. You want to know 1, 3, 5 miles. My guidance is look at a 20-minute drive circle, because that's where 80% of your residents are going to come from. And if there's already competition, or if there's land and it's easy for somebody else to put some up, you're taking a pretty high risk. Whereas you can look around and find something. By the way, that means if there's a building there, brand new building or 3 years old, and it was put up for $17 million, I help somebody acquire one of those for $6 million. Well, the original guys made a horrible mistake. Well, by getting the basis down low enough, you can now drop your prices under the market and take advantage of that mistake that somebody else had made to have a great business. So you got to really understand the local situation in lots of detail to get this right. The other one that is also quite common is, you know, somebody who started off with one property and grew the business and then did a second one and grew the business, that doesn't mean they have good, you know, oversight. They can't afford to hire a regional nurse to oversee things. It's too much money. They maybe don't have good systems. They certainly don't have purchasing programs to control the costs. And so their costs are not in line with what they should be to get the return. So, you know, if you buy one that's getting a 20% NOI, you know, it's one of the few places where you can go in and fix the cost in less than a year, fill the building up and have a 30% NOI. And that thus produces really nice returns for your investors.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think you see one, if not two, that might not be enough to scale. I think you'd mentioned the number earlier, you know, a good operator.
Yeah, scaling is definitely an issue for people. You know, if you have one, two, these operators go through cycles. The first is, you know, I just got to get one to happen. And then I get two and I get three and I get four. And now all of a sudden I get to the point where I can't drive around and see them all anymore. It's getting harder. So I got to hire staff. And when I get to 10, I now have to have a full-time accountant. You know, somebody's got to do the books. I really got to have somebody who's worried about my maintenance and all my properties. I begin to have overhead. And so somebody who's got 10 properties is probably pretty good at it. And they go through a cycle where the machine is starting to really run. And those are like teenagers. They're really pretty good at it, maybe a little over rambunctious. And now they get to 20 and they get to 30. And it's like things begin to fall apart when they get to 40 or 50, because it's a different business. You're no longer able to know all of your managers at each site face to face. You can't visit them all and impose your sort of, this is a business about taking care of people. It's about hospitality. It's about genuinely caring about them. And because of that, as you get bigger, you become more institutional and you forget that. And there are some big national chains that struggle with this problem all the time. An unusual business.
It really is. There's a lot of nuance to it that I probably didn't understand before.
But I would tell you, it's actually, you can get started learning it pretty quickly. If you go to my website, you can download my book for free. And I explain all these things in 150 pages. So you know what you're looking for and what things you ought to go read and how you get in and all that kind of stuff. So it was designed for three audiences. I teach at a number of universities. And what I found is students had this craving to understand, especially the economics and the financials better, because they really weren't getting much of that. Second was somebody who's been a nurse in the business for 15 years and really would like to become a region manager and manage 10 properties. And the third is, what about those of us who want to invest who see the demographic trend? You know, 11 million more people over 75 years of age in the next 10 years. 11 million people. Well, at least 10% of those are going to move in. And if you have good product like we have in Portland, Oregon, 25% of those will move in. So there's huge demographic opportunity here. You start by reading all these things you should read, and second, going and visiting, and third, joining the assisted living association in that state. It's called Argentum. It doesn't cost a lot of money. You get to know all the operators. You can go visit. You can get a list of all the properties easily. You can go to their local conference and see what they're learning about. None of this costs a lot of money. It just takes time. You can become an investor in one and start to see what's really going on before you jump in to do your own. Or maybe you're happy being a passive investor because there are lots of opportunities to invest.
That's fascinating. Doug, let's jump here into the final four if we can. I actually want to find out before we do that. We didn't get your website name where they can download the book. What is that?
Oh, it's 14plus.com.
Spelled out F-O-U-R-T-E-E-N plus.com.
P-L-U-S. You got to spell it out. It's a funny name, but it's because for years and years and years as a real estate investment type, the unlevered return in senior housing was 14%. It averaged 14.7%. So it's not that high anymore. It's just over 11%. But industrial and senior housing are the best ones. And over the long haul,
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Even if the industry average is over 11% unlevered, I mean.
Yeah. So it's 14plus.com.
14plus.com.
Go to the site. You can download the book and that'll get you going.
That's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. Doug, let's jump here to the final four. The first question is this. What is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
Don't be afraid of taking a risk after you do your homework.
I like that. Number two is, when it comes to investing in yourself, what is one thing you are doing to stay on top of your game?
I read every single book that I can find about senior housing.
Wow, that's ambitious. I like that. Number three is this, when it comes to investing in the world, what is one way you're making the world a better place?
I'm investing in senior housing with my time and my business and my money, but I'm also investing in behavioral health, in particular, the substance abuse business, you know, treating people. I'm the guarantor on a loan to acquire a property in Virginia. We'll open at the end of July, and we're intending to do 10 of those over the course of time because there are 21 million people who need help with substance abuse in the United States, and less than 4 million got help last year. I'm trying to help those people get their life cleaned up.
Wow. Good for you. That's awesome. So, yeah, that sounds like an amazing need. So good for you for filling that void. Doug, if listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Go to my website, 14plus.com. Send me a contact request and I'll be happy to be back to you.
Awesome. Doug, thank you so much for your time today. I certainly appreciate it.
Very much appreciate the opportunity to talk with everybody.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.